Okay. So the topic I want to cover today and probably next week, I'm not sure, is MOLED. And here's where we're going to begin to transition, because this is both a relevant topic in Hilchot Yom Tov, but it is also one of the potential sources for the potential prohibitions involved in use of electricity in general. So here's where we begin to intersect transition to those topics. So the entire sugya of Molad is not very long. It appears in Beit Adav Chav Gimel. And the Gemara tells you as follows. V'rabba Amar al gabei cheres nami asur, bishum de kamolid reicha. Putting hot spices, incense, on a hot piece of pottery, of earthenware, is prohibited because it produces a new scent in the earthenware, and you can't do that on Yom Tov. Rabba v'Rab Yosef, Dami Travayu, Sechufei Kasa Ashiroi, B'Yom Atava Asur. Mai Taima Mishum, D'Kamolid Reicha. So Rabba and Rab Yosef both said it's prohibited to overturn a cup with perfume onto silk garments on Yom Tov because it produces a new scent in the clothing. So the Gemara introduces this prohibition, Dirabanan, called Molid. Right, that to create something new is prohibited. Right, to create a new scent is prohibited. So the Gemara says, well, why is that different than taking a piece of aromatic wood between your fingers and rubbing it between your fingers, taking off a piece? Right, like smelling besamim or something like that. So the Gemara says, "Atam recha miha ita v'usufe hu dekamosif recha," because there the scent exists, but you're only adding to it. "Acha ulude hu dekamolid recha," here you're adding. And Rava Amar agabe gachelet nami muter midi dahave abus abisra agumrei. Rava says it's permitted to sprinkle these spices on the coals themselves, just like you can put meat on the coals for roasting. That, even though it creates a smell, is not problematic. So, what do we learn from this Gemara? Right, it's two lines of Gemara, but it becomes the opening to an entire new sugya. So what do we learn from this Gemara? Right, someone define the Isser that we learn from this Gemara, the Isser of Molad. Yeah. Right, so the Gemara says if you add a smell to the clothing, but it's not, now is creating the smell the problem? Okay, so there's two things here, right? One is that the Gemara says it's not a problem if you bring out something that already existed. That's not a problem. And therefore, if you have think hadassim, right? Hadassim have a smell. If you like rub them between your fingers, you know how the smell gets stronger. That's not a problem. So first thing you learn is that whatever this issue is, a molid, it's about creating something new, but not increasing quantity or strength, right? Not increasing magnitude. It has to be an introduction of a new quality. But the Gemara says that if I throw these spices directly on the fire, which will create an aromatic atmosphere, so the Gemara says that's permitted. It's only problematic when I'm infusing the clothing here. I'm infusing something with the new scent. So why would that be? What? Yeah, right? Because the Gemara is saying that, look, it's the problem is when I create, right, I increase the quality in something tangible, And why isn't a problem when I just throw it on the fire and create like an aromatic scent in the air? So the Gemara doesn't really say, right? Now there are other, there are reasons to believe elsewhere in halacha. I'm going to try this side now. Right, so it could be...
No problem with, like, using a spray bottle.
Right, so it sounds like it's something about changing a quality, right, in something tangible that's problematic. Now, why is just creating smell in the air not a problem? So either you say, well, I don't know, in that sense, the smell already existed. It's adding it, infusing it, something else that adds that dimension. Or, and we have evidence for this elsewhere in halacha, smell is considered very amorphous in halacha. And therefore, it could be that simply creating a smell in the air and not in a tangible object, that is not real enough. Right? And in order to say that you're creating something new, it would be, that's not enough. So if you look at Rashi, Rashi, number one, says, Zekamalad Recha, so he says, first of all, it's clear that what we're talking about is you're introducing the smell into something that didn't have the smell, right? Because, again, the Gemara said that it's only about introducing something new and not increasing the magnitude. V'asur midirabanan, this is a rabbinic prohibition, and why is it prohibited? Shehamolid davar chadash, because someone who creates something new, Karov hu l'ose melacha chadasha. It is close to performing a melacha. So what does that, what does that mean? What does Rashi, how does Rashi define this? What? In what sense is it karov l'melacha? Right? In what sense is it close to a melacha? What does that mean? Right? What is Rashi getting at? Oh, very good. Right? Is that the common denominator between melacha in general seems to be that it's creative. Now, this is apparently not creative in the specific 39 ways that are prohibited on Shabbos. But in the end of the day, it is creative. And therefore, it resembles the underlying conceptual model that all malachot are patterned after. Right? Fundamentally, creativity. And therefore, rabbinically, we introduce this prohibition called molid. Now, Rashi is also clear that the way he understands the Ram Molid here is only in the case of infusing it into the object. So the problem isn't the smell that's created, it's the scented garment that is created, right? That's where the creation happens. The Meiri challenges him on this, in number two, and he says, Rashi mifareish shareach nichnas lacheres, v'anu mifarshim al arecha yotzei misham. So Rashi says that the problem is about the infused scent, which seems to be the simple read of the Gemara. But the Meiri challenges this, and he says, no, he thinks that that's not true. Creating a scent inside of the clothing, he doesn't think is, in fact, molid. He actually thinks it's about the creation of the smell from nothing. Now, why then is it mutter in the case you put it on the coals? So he must understand that when you're putting on the coals, you're not doing it to create the scent. You're doing it for something else, right? And maybe it's mutter if that's not your main intent, or something like that. Like, right, basar agumre is when you roast meat on the coals. So some of the coals might go out because the fat will drip on it, and we don't care, right? Because that's not what you're doing. What you're doing is you're roasting meat. If some of them go out because the fat puts it out, it's not your fault, right? That's not your intent. And maybe he'll say the same thing, right? That no, creating sense, even not infused into an object, is in fact significant, as long as that's what you intend to do. And if you look at number three, Shulchan Aruch captures this, and he says, "Im kvar hayamunach min bosem ze al habeged ze, binyan shekvar nichnas reach habosem bebeged mutar laniach alav v'yom tov ov min bosem ze kedei lahosif reach bosem ze bebeged." If the clothes were already perfumed, so to add perfume is permitted, because now you're just increasing the smell. Aval asur lahaniach min bosem acher sharehu molid reach hadas beveged biyom tov. But to add a new scent would be prohibited. Now the only thing that Shulchan Aruch adds here is that it's not just that it increasing, that creating a new smell would be problematic. Right? You might have thought that that's only if it has no smell. Right? If it was scentless, so adding a smell is not a problem. But let's say it already had a certain scent. Right? You used a very powerful fabric softener, and your clothes already smell. Right? They already have, they smell like lavender. Right? And now you want to add, I have no idea what smell complements lavender. But, vanilla. Vanilla and lavender. I don't know. That sounds like something you'd find in a store. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, sounds like
sure.
It. What?
Sure,
why not? If not, this is my my new get rich quick scheme. Yes.
Mr. Capitalism can be so overwhelming.
What? That's what you learned from this, is capitalism is overwhelming.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I was just thinking about it. Like, in Israel, there's, like, a modern thing to get, and in America, there's, like, that is not even true. Like, there are far fewer options in America. Everybody loves that. Yeah, I know. It's stressful. I hate it.
Okay. You're stressed out by the choices in America. I got it. Okay. What? Anyways, but whatever it is, so the Shulchan Aruch says that let's say something had the smell already of lavender, and now I want to add vanilla. So maybe you would have thought that that's permitted, because it already has a smell, but I'm just enhancing it. He says, no, that's not, that's also problematic, because you're adding a different smell. It's, if I want to add more lavender, so that's fine, right? Because that's just increasing quantity. But if I'm adding the vanilla to it, well, now it's fundamentally different. Now it's lavender and vanilla. Yeah, I really have no idea if this would work. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. But honestly, this is like your gripe against capitalism. Is lavender and vanilla theoretical? Anyway, I don't know. Like, you know, we have plenty of economics discussions with, you know, in Migdal, but usually their problems with capitalism are like they've bought the Bernie narrative over the last 4 years and define themselves as socialists.
Oh no, I'm fine with capitalism.
You don't like choice, what?
We need to interact with ideas, not with theology. Yeah.
We need to say it again.
We need to interact with the ideas of Bernie Sanders, not interact with I am.
Oh, yeah, sure. I'm fine with that. Yes, we can have debates about economic theory and fine.
Of course.
Wonderful. I love studying economics and philosophy of economics. It's great. The last few years have been weird politically. That's all I know. Everything is weird, and the conversations that I hear from students have gotten weirder year by year. The more exclusively they were in high school during the last 4 years of politics, the crazier the ideas are on both sides. Because things have polarized. So, like, I see a marked difference between 2 years ago and now. 2 years ago, there was some nuance. I see no nuance anymore. Everyone is either all the way on one extreme or all the way on the other. That is it. Oh well.
No, that's what's because the vocal ones are like that. I feel like guys are more social than girls are.
Thank you for disproving the point intrinsically, but you know, fundamentally. Yeah.
Is it totally in response to every single
solution
that
it
not just
about? Okay,
let's talk about lavender. Lavender is the
Okay, lavender, great. Or Molin, whatever. Molin's good too. Fine.
Full out.
Yeah. Fine. So if you look at the riff, the riff seems to, in the end of the day, not really believe that molid is a thing, okay? Because we had trouble already defining the difference between the case of dropping the spice on the cheres and dropping it on the open coal. So Rashi solved the problem by saying that it's a difference of whether you are infusing something, which presumably is more real, or releasing into the air, which for Rashi is not problematic. But the riff sees in this a rejection of the entire category and argues that the issue here really wasn't molid at all. That was just a hava amina. That was just a possibility. So Rav says, Omer of Yehuda, al gabe gochelet asur. Mipnei shehu mechabe al gabe cheres mutar. If you put it on a coal, it's prohibited because it extinguishes it. And if you put it on the earthenware, it's mutar. So then the Gemara goes through a whole bunch of problems. And this is how we quote the last line, lo kasha. Kan begachelet shel matechet, kan begachelet shel eitz. If you put it on metal or wood, it's different. Why? Because on metal, if you put it on burning hot metal, which halachically is the status of fire, it's permitted because it won't extinguish it. But if you put it on wood, it's problematic. Some relate by the other. My son, Bibasa Agumrei, said, why is this different than meat, where you're also extinguishing the coals by barbecuing? Some are lying. I was like a kibu, yachik a kibu. He said, there's not actually putting it out. Here, when you smother it with these incense, so it puts out the candle. Now, I don't want to get too bogged down in how we understand the sugya, but the riff seems to, in the end of the day, think that l'maskanara gemara, the issue is not actually this category of molid. It's something else that has to do with kibui. And if you look at the Rambam makes this quite clear. And he says in 5, Ein ma'ashnin b'ktoret b'yom tov, mipnei shehu mechabeh. You can't use these incense on Yom Tov because by putting it on the flames, you are going to extinguish them. And even to smell them and put them in clothes and mutar la shein dagara peirot kedei shiyoshu l'achila kemoshe mutar l'tzlot basar ala eish. But you're allowed to basically infuse scent into food. Right, if that's what you want to do, you want to infuse scent into food, that's fine. And so what you see in the Rambam and the Rif is the way they end up understanding this sugya is that molid is not really a category. Right? That was the hava mina of the Gemara. But lemaskana, the Gemara is completely discussing issues of mechabeh, of when do you and don't you extinguish the fire. So what we have here is a category of molid rea, which may or may not exist. L'maskanara Gemara. And if it does exist, it's Sirabanan. And even when it does exist, you have a machloket between Rashi, who thinks it's problematic in the particular instance when you infuse the clothes with the scent, and Meiri, who thinks the very creation of the scent is problematic. And if you look at Shulchan Aruch, number 6, he says, Ein osin mugmar, you don't make these Right. This, you don't make this sense. Meaning to spread out the spices on the coals. Bain lahariach, whether you want to smell it, bain ligmar abayda or kelim, or to make the house or your kelim smell. But if you're doing it in order to make your fruit edible, eat from it. The Ramah writes, "V'aser lischov kos mivusam al begadim mishum demolid b'hen reyach." But it's aser to put it on kelim because it adds smell to the clothes. So if you look at Rav Ovadia Yosef, he summarizes the issue as it comes lehalacha. So he says, "Hayim utar latet nebosim b'shabbat b'yom tov b'yadayim o b'panim." Are you allowed to put on perfume on Shabbos or Yom Tov on your hands or your face? Because it adds the, because of molid reyach. So Shuba, bigmara b'mesechet beitza, in the Gemara that we just saw, Rabba b'Rav Yosef dami travayo, so chufei kasa ashirayo b'yamatava asur, my taima, mishum de kamolid reyach. Uperish Rashi, mishum mishum molid reyach be Right, the Ramah follows Rashi consistently in this sugya and concludes that creating a new smell is indeed problematic. Ulam, Harif, Ve'arambam, Ve'arashi, Shmito, Alachazo. But the Rif, Rambam, and Rashi leave out this formulation of Alacham. Ve'chatav Rabbeinu, Hagaon, Rav Chaim, Ben Atar, Zatzal. And the sun has moved yet again. Okay, now I'm good. Okay. All right, thanks. Fine. So, and like in like 45 minutes, it'll be pitch black. Welcome to the winter. So, because they think that this is not lahalacha. The Amorim argue, and the end of the day, they think this is about mechabeh, and there is no such issur of molid reyach. Ulam, Maran Beit Yosef hevil lahalacha de Rav Yosef ana lahachmir, v'chein dar b'lahalachot. But the Beit Yosef does, in fact, at least as a stringency, quote the position of Rav Aram Yosef, Viraj Bavod HaKodesh, V'av V'sefer Rishon L'tzion Tzim, Shalom Na'agu L'achmir, V'arizek V'arur Mutarim, V'acharim Na'agu V'em Eitzur, Shiyat HaRatzai L'achiram B'fneihem, G'vorm B'Psachim, V'rak V'etzaret Sofik Nosaf, V'davar Yish La'kel, U'barur Shebechol Zayin Evdel Ben Shabbat L'yom Tov. He says that the end of the day, the Rishon LeZion and Shulchan Aruch say that the Rambam and the Rif and the Rosh reject this category in its entirety. Rashi accepts it. The Beit Yosef says the Minog is to accept it, but only as a Chumrah, which functionally means that if there are no extenuating circumstances, then we will treat the creation of scent as prohibited. But if there's another reason to be lenient, and there's another smith lahakel, so then we will be lenient. So Rav Ovadia continues. V'hine hasurei zahav katav sh'asur lekohanim anosim kaim v'shabbat v'yom tov lechotzi them b'mayim zanu b'hem mevradim ibnei shemolidim reach bidehem. Based on this, the Taz prohibits washing your hands in rose water. Does anyone do this? Is this a thing? I don't know. Yeah, that makes sense. V'odayin b'sholmei shiv, ulam agon b'alchacham tzvi, ochiach la'atir, v'imishnur shemen alachim sachin shemen v'arei ha'makadiyam b'shabbat, shikain darakam masuch b'chol. The Chacham Tzvi says, no, it's permitted. And you see that the Gemara said that princes would rub their hands in this rose oil. And And Shulchan Aruch fastens this way as well, as long as it's something that people do regularly, and therefore it's not just medicinal, so then it's permitted on Shabbat. So from here you derive that even the people who are stringent, many of them will be lenient if the scent is created in a human being. And you see similarly the Gemara in Shabbat, so the people used to wash their hands in frankincense or in jasmine something. I don't know exactly what you did with the jasmine to make it afar, jasmine powder, whatever it is. And you don't have to worry about it taking off hair, etc. Fine. The next paragraph. But the Ben Ish Chai was indeed stringent on this. But he says, because the Rif Ram Rash ain't called Rabbi Recha b'Shabbat, the Acharai Zik, Acharav Agon Rabbi Shalom Shulal b'Shut Neve Shalom, Daniel Lachush Lachmer Lerech b'Shirayim v'Pachar Abba Vasara Damon Lachush. So Rabbi Avadia says, based on this, what we should say is, look, we don't really hold that it's Asur to begin with, Svarti Psaf, but we hold it L'Chumra, but therefore we only take it L'Chumra in the cases where it resembles the exact case of the Gemara. So infusing scent into clothes will be prohibited, but infusing scent into the human body will be permitted. Right, that is Rabbi Avadia's conclusion from a Sephardi halachic perspective. The Ashkenazi perspective would therefore be to prohibit it. And the Magen Avraham, as we noted before, clarifies that it's only prohibited to create a new scent. But anytime you're adding, where it's not creating, it's just increasing in quantity, it is going to be permitted. So he says in 8, the Savim, even though you could take, you know, grass, you could take whatever, cinnamon, let's say, and rub it between your fingers, great smell. There you're just adding a smell, and that's fine. And he said, as we said before, adding a different scent is problematic, right? Meaning even though your clothes may already have lavender, if you add vanilla, that's problematic, because you're adding a new scent. So this is the first sugya that we need to take into account, whether or not there is even such a thing as a prohibition, derabanan, called molin. And what we get is that Rashi, lemaskana, thinks, yes, but only when it's infused in a solid object. Meiri seems to think even creating a scent itself is prohibited. The Rif, the Rambam, and the Rosh reject this as a category. The Beit Yosef accepts it, but only L'chumra, which means Ikaradin, the Sephardi Pesach, is not to accept it, but we're stringent if there's no other mitigating factor. If there's a mitigating factor, you can be lenient. So this is the first time we're introduced to Molus. And this prohibition, whatever it is, exists both on Shabbat and on Yom Tov. And it, as we saw, creates some sort of limitation on creating things, right? Creating new qualities on Shabbat and Yom Tov. Okay? So this is case one of Molin. So this is Shabbat and Yom Tov, okay? This is Shabbat and Yom Tov. Now, there are two other types of molad, though. It's going to be the third one that's the most important, but we need to understand this because, now again, as I said, we're doing two things here, right? One is we need to understand Shabbat Yom Tov issues, and the other is we need to understand molad as a category because it becomes one of the bases for, right, one of the earliest halachic positions on electricity, the Beit Yitzchak of Yitzchak Shmelkis, who think the reason electricity is usher is because of this category. But so far from category one, we see that there is no difference between Shabbat and Yom Tov, but it may or may not exist. Right? That's what we walk away from the first sugya with. Okay. The second potential source for Molid is the case of crushing ice. Right? Crushing ice. So the Gemara tells us in Shabbat Daf Nun Aleph, Ve'ein mirazkin lo et ha-sheleg ve'lo et ha-barad, b'Shabbat b'shil she'azuv ha-meimah. You aren't allowed to crush ice on Shabbat to make the water flow out. But you can put ice in your water, and you don't have to worry about the fact that it's going to melt. That's fine. I don't know why I put the next line, but yes, Hadronach Bamei Tomnin. It's the last line in the Perek of Bamei Tomnin that adds nothing to it. It just happens to be what got copied there. Okay. Why is it usher to crush ice on Shabbat and Yom Tov? So here, there are three positions in Rishonim. The Gemara is not very forthcoming. And very quickly, the positions are, Rashi says, look at 11, Mishum dikamolid b'shabad v'dami l'malacha shaboreh mayim ha'ilu. Rashi here sees case number two of molid. Because before it was ice, now it's water, you're creating something new, it's prohibited. The Rambam, just like in the sugya about scent, he rejects the read that it's about molid and writes that it's about something else. Here too, the Rambam writes that the issue at hand is not molid. So in 9, he says, "Ve'ein merazkin lo." Sorry, number 10. Kvashim shlo kotsh sechatan im l'rachef kufan mutar lo timi mana asur ve'ein merazkin l'shel kadei she'zubu mimav l'rasegu l'toch kara l'toch hakos. He says it's a problem of schita. He brings it in the context of squeezing, right? Midoraita, squeezing fruit is prohibited. Certain types of fruit. We won't get into that now. Rabbinically, this seems to be a rabbinic expansion of the problems of tochein, of crushing, grinding, schita, squeezing, right? Which all goes under the category of tochein. So again, the Rambam thinks you can't crush ice on Shabbat, but he thinks this teaches us nothing about this category called molid. The Sefer HaTrumah has a third position in number 12, and he says, "Ein mirazkin et ha-shel ved ha-barad, aval noten l'toch ha-ke'arav eino choshesh." You can't crush snow or ice, but you can put it in your cup and don't worry about it. Asur l'ma'ech ha-tel ha-zodu t'alu k'momay mishum shehu nola. So this sounds like Rashi, but it's actually not. Rashi said that there's a problem in the creation of something new. That's called molid. But there's another thing which sounds very much like molid, but it's not, which is nolad. What's nolad? Nolad is super mukta. Okay? One of the most stringent categories of mukta is nolad, something that didn't exist before Shabbat or Yom Tov and comes into existence on Shabbat or Yom Tov. It is usher to benefit from that. And not benefit. It's usher to use that. It's usher to move it. And it sounds like for the Sefer HaTrumah, if you were to create water from ice, so that would be creating something new. But the problem isn't molid. It's not that you're creating something new. It's that would be mukta, the mukta called nolad, and you're not allowed to create something which is going to be mukta. So that is the three positions of So the Gemara actually has a discussion in Nida. No, not that. That's a different problem. No, the Gemara has a discussion in Nida that there were Hasidim Arishonim who believed that they could, you know, that women gave birth precisely, right, at 9 months, or 10 months, whatever, right? And therefore would only be intimate with their wives on days that would not create a situation in which they would give birth on Shabbat. Now, the Gemara doesn't accept this for halakha, but there were people who thought that way.
Didn't they figure it out 9 months later when their baby was born on Shabbat? Like, how
I don't know. What do you want from me? We don't actually pass them this way. It's a discussion in Nida. But,
obviously not.
What? Not because of Nolad, by the way. Just because of other Chil Shabbos issues.
Okay.
But,
well, obviously still, like, maybe, like,
okay. Fine. But again, okay, again, what you see here, and I'm going to skip a little bit here, is that it is a machloket, again, whether this category even introduces the iser of molid, or whether this is something completely different. And in Shulchan Aruch, you see that there is a discussion of whether you're allowed to put a food which has congealed fat on the fire because the fat will become a liquid. Shulchan Aruch says it's mutar, and the Ramah says v'yesh machmirin v'nagu lachmir v'miu b'makom tzarach yezus mochas v'arishana. So here again, Shulchan Aruch, as in this case rather, Shulchan Aruch seems to reject this type of category of molid, because he simply allows creating a situation in which congealed fat is going to melt. The Ramah, even though in the other case he was convinced, like Rashi, that you can't create a sense, here he says the minhag is to be machmir, but doesn't seem to accept it limaskana. I gave you a summary. I don't know if you want to look at it, but this is a halacha that comes up a lot, and this is the sugya it comes from. Two of the most common shailas that people get on this, you've probably heard them before, and people, you know, insist that it's like halacha Moshe Mitzinai, but they have no idea where it comes from. One is, have you ever heard people say you can't make ice cubes on Shabbat?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's from this sugya. It's probably wrong. It's almost definitely not how we paskin. But look, what? Well, you'll see. So the Dovid Misharim 14 says as follows. Look at the second line. He said, "Nihida Dovishagu Varad Digamodim Kushim Chazvin and Maskem Mikol Makom Zerak Eich Zosem Ein Maskem Kim Yakol Chashiv Alei Lamasid Mahanim Vur Etc." Umimela Gamodikaru Chashiv Maskem. He said, "You know what? The reason he thinks that some people are makil in terms of, like Shulchan Aruch, in terms of letting fat melt, is because maybe they don't really view congealed fat as a solid, right? They realize that it's just a liquid that has temporarily hardened, and therefore, molid / nolad are only a problem when you create something new. But if you realize that it's really just a liquid already, it's just, you know, and this middle state of the solid is very temporary, so then allowing it to become a liquid is not problematic. But Masha Enk in Lahafoch, Im Osim Imaim Shu Maske Kfor, Im Ken Machshavto Lafuki Dimi Masha Zaber Chashiv Nola. So Dovid Meisharim says, but he thinks everyone will agree that to freeze something is Asur, because, well, the natural state may be liquid, then freezing something, the natural state is clearly the liquid, and therefore you are creating something new by freezing it, right? So he argues that going into the direction which is less common is more problematic, and therefore freezing water is molid. If you look at 15, Shmir Shabbat Gil Chata writes, Tov limana, mila teit b'shabbat yom tov ma'im l'toch te'akpa. It's better not to put water into your freezer. Amenat lohovcham l'kubiyot kerach, elam geish, it's better not to, unless you really, really have an ice cube emergency. Right? What? Yeah, okay. But he says, No, he doesn't mean that much of a mercy. Yes, I know. He says, you could do it right before Shabbat, that's not a problem. And he says, obviously, you're allowed to put water in a freezer to chill it. That's not a problem. Yes. Now, if you look, but you look at his footnote, he says as follows. And he says, where does he get this from? So he says, this is from the Dovev Misharim. The Sphere Lady Mishagam, I'm loving no lot. I know Mishum Jeshelek, Khoshavaleka Maska, Vimaska, Gagos, Mishelek Maska, Harechishavala Maska, Khoshav Nola, Majingos, Mimaska Keras, Dimatum Menushim Maska, Khoshav Nola, Lukulayam, I in Chum. But he says, Akshamati. But he says, that's the Dovev Misharim. Akshamati, Migon, Rishom Zalman Orbach, that's all. But Rishom Zalman Orbach said no. The Mechavan, Jimabur, Bitsiman Shin Chav, Dimutlish Barkach, Mikacho, Mime, Shinikato, Mime, Tafta, Valonis Gershom, Shinikras, Bishabat. She asked Mishum, no, Lord. He says, then we say it's mutter to break ice that's on top of a water. It's not letting you into the pail of water. Yeshloma, the Rajab Nasa Maska, who the Chashiv Asu, or Velo, Kishinishana, Ligri Uta, Mimayim, Lakashiv, Kisochetapua. He said, he argues the exact opposite. That because the preferred state is water, right, the natural state is water, that's where you could talk about it being a problem of molid. Because you're taking this harder to use thing and creating the better one. So that is creating something better. But ice is harder to use. It's not its natural state. And furthermore, he says, there's a big difference between crushing ice into water and freezing water into ice, and that is, what's the big difference for him? That when you freeze ice, it will melt by itself, right? So freezing, right, crushing the ice into water is speeding up a process that under normal circumstances will not reverse itself naturally, right? Meaning at room temperature, the way we normally live. But freezing water is putting water into a temporary state. Because if we view the natural state as the temperature at which we live our lives, most of the time that's at a temperature at which water won't freeze. And therefore, Shlomo Zalman argues, no, it's specifically in the direction which is more permanent, which has more staying force, that you can imagine that it's a problem of creating something new. Combine that with the fact that not everybody holds that this sugya is about that at all, right? The Rambam thinks that it's about something that looks like crushing, which obviously that's only if you crush ice and not if you refreeze it. And therefore, Rosh Shlomo Zalman argues that it's probably mutter to freeze ice cubes. So, for three reasons, right? For several reasons. One is that according to the Rambam, the problem is crushing. It looks like you're crushing and grinding, which is obviously only a problem in the direction of water and not back frozen. The second is he's not sure it's molid or nolad because that may only be in a permanent state, right? Not one that reverses by itself. And furthermore, he thinks that it's plausible to say that it's only in the direction which is considered more, right, preferred, rather than the one which is generally not preferred, right, which is considered of lesser quality. And for all those reasons, Rosh Shlomo Zalman says, on balance, it seems that it's not problematic to freeze ice cubes. Now, you want to be machmir, that's fine. But when you read some of these English books who say it like Halacha Moshe Mitzinai, that it is usser to make ice cubes, you have to realize that is a very, right, that is a minority position, right? It's legitimate to be stringent for it, but it may not really exist. Yeah. Correct, but we mean, like, objectively speaking, like, preferred in terms of its objectively natural state, right? Correct, you could have argued, well, you want to make it, that's essentially the Dovev Misharim. Yeah, the third one that you'd be shocked how many times I got this shayla, but I've gotten it many times, is using a whipped cream dispenser on Shabbat. Have you heard people say this is usher?
Yeah.
Okay, Oh, there you go. Okay, well, both of those are positions. But I just gave you a quick summary from the Ask the Rabbi from Eretz Chemda, from my Daniel Mann, where he just says, look, the most serious issue is molid, creating a new reality by changing the phase of an object. Some say that similarly, right, like the fact you can't turn a solid into a liquid, that one may not turn a liquid into a solid, i.e. freeze water, to make ice cubes, and that's the Dovid Meshurim that we saw. But we dealt with this issue in Chemdat Yamim and cited ground, strong ground for leniency. Orchot Shabbat says that even those who forbid making ice cubes could permit spraying whipped cream from a canister because the only purpose of that cream in the canister is to be turned into a whipped cream. On the other hand, you might be more stringent because here one actively and directly with the presence of one creates the foam as opposed to putting water in the freezer, which only provides a cold setting for the slow process of freezing to begin. However, Mordechai Willig told me another reason for leniency. The change from a thick liquid to a foam is not enough to be considered molid. One can make the argument that it's forbidden to spray whipped cream from a canister. Common practice is to permit it. Since we have shown the halakhic basis for this practice, we do not feel it's necessary to change it. In Toronto, people used to ask, because it used to be a machloket between different rabbis in Toronto, who were very vocal about this. The right, Yeshua Weber, who was the rabbi of the Clinton Park Synagogue, thought it was prohibited, and Shlomo Miller, who is the like Haredi posek of Toronto, thought it was permitted. So there were plenty of people who felt like, well, if Ray Miller says it's mutter, then it must be mutter. He's also like the posek of Lakewood, apparently. He's the Rosh Kollel of the Lakewood Kollel in Toronto, and he also is apparently the acting Rosh Kollel of the Dayanut Kollel in Lakewood in commutes or something. So if he says it's mutter, many people just felt, well, that it must be mutter. But this was the machloket. Okay. These are two versions of molid. But there are two more relevant categories, and this is where we really get to the problem of molid that begin to really affect our lives on Shabbat and Yom Tov. We'll see how many we get through. It's 5 to 2. Okay, let's see. So the third type of molid is what we find in number 17, the Gemara in Shabbat of Memchet. Rabba v'Rebbe Zeira iklu levei reish galuta. Rabba and Rebbe Zeira visited the house of the exilarch. Do we know anything about the political system in the time of the Gemara? Have you learned this at all? So we know what the exilarch is, like the government is appointed leader of the Jewish community, political leader, right? And there's this tension constantly between the rabbinic leadership and the political leadership. Often the exilarch was also a Talmud Chacham, which complicated matters, right? Because they were also Talmud Chacham, but their authority was from their position rather than from pure scholarship. But anyway, so Chazua Lahu Avdo Dana Chuzu de Maya Puma de Kumkima. He saw a servant who was putting a thing of water on top of what's a kumkuma. Yeah, there we go. A kumkum, right? A hot water, I mean, not an electric one, obviously, but, you know, a hot water heater thing. What? A kettle. Is that a kettle? Yeah. Have you never seen a kettle that goes on fire? Have you? You know the old style kettles that, like, whistle? You know what I'm talking about? Have you never seen, like, a kettle that, like, you know, whistles? You know? Okay. Yeah. I'm just making sure, you know. And it's from a days gone past with, you know, rotary phones and whatever. What? Anyways. So Nazeh Rabba yelled at him. Right? Rabba opposed this. So Amar Leh Rabbi Zeira, Mai Shnami Mecham Al Gabe Mecham. He said, why is this different than putting something on top of a pot of water, right, where you're allowed to use, right, like the double blech, right, that's where it comes from, a Mecham Al Gabe Mecham. You're not heating something up directly on the fire, you're heating it up on top of a pot. So Amar Leh, Hotam Ukme Kamokin. He said, when you put something on top of a pot, you are maintaining heat. Hacha olide kamolid. Here you are creating. So this is the third type of category where you see this. And here even the Rambam agrees that there is some sort of problem of molid heat. Okay, so it's not actually cooking, but it seems to be that in certain circumstances, adding heat, even when it's not formally cooking, is prohibited because of the category three of molid, which everyone seems to agree to, which is molid chom. So you look at the Rambam. The Rambam in 19 says, "Manichen mechem al gabei mechem b'Shabbat, u'kedera al gabei kedera al gabei, u'kedera al gabei mechem, mechem al gabei kedera." It can put a pot in a pot, and a kettle on a kettle, and a kettle on a pot, etc. B'tachli them v'atzeik, and you can cover them in dough. Lo b'shil she'achomo, not to they'll heat up, but b'shil she'yamid al chomam, but to maintain their heat. So also elu lachmin b'Shabbat, because it's only problematic to fully insulate something. But to put a hot object, a hot pot on top of another hot pot, to maintain basic temperature, mutar, that's permitted. But you can't take something totally cold and put it on a hot pot on Shabbat. Because you're adding heat. Now I don't want to get into the full issue of cooking and blast and all that. But what you see is a third potential category of molid, which is adding a level of heat, which also seems to be molid. Now this type of I'll hold off on it. But this type becomes very important for this type of molid becomes very important for certain types of modern heating. And the first time I got this shayla was when I was in the kollel in Gush. One of the students was in the army, off in some base where he wasn't allowed to tell me. He's like, I'm for security reasons I can't tell you where I am, but it's somewhere up in the north and it's cold, and we're outside for 24 hours in a pit. On Shabbat. Am I, he's like, it's like numbingly cold. Am I allowed to use those 24-hour warming packs? You know what I'm talking about? You crack them, right? And then heat comes out from a chemical reaction, right? So the main sugya that's brought into discussion, right, so maybe it wasn't from age 12 hours.
I've never seen ones that are 20.
So maybe that's what it was, 12 hours?
Usually like 8 hours.
8 hours, 12 hours, whatever it was. So, yeah, it wasn't, right, it wasn't 12, 24 hours, but it's like, whatever it was, and he was asking me, can you use it? So it turns out it's a big machloket, and one of the main sugyas that comes up is this one, right, is whether it is mutter. Now, most of the poskim are willing to be makel, at least in cases of need. Right, because there's enough room to be makel, and there's no light, and the heat comes from within, and then it dissipates, right? So it's temporary and whatever. But anyway, this is the main sugya for that. Correct. Correct. We'll come to it. I put the practical stuff at the end, right? The fourth one, and this is the most important one, and this brings us back really to Yom Tov and to eventually to electricity. And this is the one that everybody agrees exists, and that is number 20. So as we've talked about, what milachot are permitted on Yom Tov? Ochel nefesh. And then went through all the expansions of Mitoch and Hovil and Shavu L'chol Nefesh and all those. What were the two malachot that the Rambam outlined as the most permitted of all malachot? Hotza'ah, right, carrying, and Havara, right, lighting a fire. Remember the Rambam, he He said that those are the two that you don't need any justification whatsoever for? Okay, good. So now let me ask you a simple question. Did any of you, when you read that halacha, wonder if Havara is completely and totally mutter? It is the most mutter of any malacha, besides for carrying on Yom Tov. Then why do we drive ourselves absolutely crazy on Yom Tov by lighting a yahrzeit candle so that we can transfer the flame, and like we sit there because it's supposed to be 24 hours, which isn't really enough because you light it before Yom Tov, and then for second day Yom Tov you need to light the candles, what are you going to do? And you're like, people are sitting there and they're like, wait, I need to light my candles, but I can't light yet because it's not safe and it's between first day and second day, and how am I going to light my candles? And then you end up, it ends up blowing out and you go to your neighbor and borrow a flame, right? And then it's windy and you try to carry it, right? You're aware of this problem, right? No, you've never, second day of Yom Tov, how do you light candles? You transfer flame. You don't light a new match. You're aware of this? No? Everyone's aware of this?
Yeah.
No, okay. You've never had this problem, you're lucky, right?
I've never had, but if you don't have
to
go out.
So all I know is that, right, two holidays ago, mine went out, I went to my neighbor, Rosh Hashanah, mine went out, I went to my neighbor, and Sukkot, theirs went out, they came to mine. This is a very common experience, because 24-hour yahrzeit candles are completely unhelpful in this case. That's why you get the 48-hour ones or the 7-day ones, you know? Yeah, well, they have the 7-day ones, which you feel very awkward using, because those are clearly for all of Shiva, right? But, like, they're... And get what? The witch candles? How long do they go for? Okay. Yeah, you could do that, I guess. But anyways, so did you ever wonder why it is if the most mutter of all melachot is mavir, is lighting a fire, why is it that we drive ourselves absolutely crazy to make sure that we can transfer a flame? Just turn on your stove. Right? But we all know we don't do that. What? Yeah, we do actually know that. But do you wonder why? And the answer is because Havara may be mutter, but the one case of molad that really, really everyone agrees with is number 20. Is Ein Motzin in Or. You cannot create a new fire. Why? 20, my time out? Mishum de kamolid b'yom tov. Because you are creating a new flame, and that is prohibited. So molad Eish is category number 4. So we've seen molad Reyach, which is was a machloket awi paskin. Molid of the ice to water, machloket whether that's even what's going on. But category 3, molid chom, which does seem to be agreed upon, and the most major category is molid esh, is the creation of new fire, which is dirabanan prohibited because of this thing called molid. And you looked at the Rambam as well, even though he rejected the first two, the case of Molad Reach and the case of Molad Mayim, takes this Gemara exactly as it appears. Ein Motzien et Ha'esh, you cannot take flame out. I mean, you can't create a new flame. Lo min Eitzim, lo min Avanim, lo min Matachot. Not from stones, right? Not from flint, not from metal, not from wood. However you're going to make it. Kegon shechochino tan ze bezeh, umakin ze bezuah tetet ha'esh. Meaning, you scrape them together, you hit them together until a spark comes. Oz chuchit melei amayim shemanichan ato kineged eina shemed after nagzal lepishtam v'chayotze bo v'yitalek, said, nor can you be the sadistic little kid who's sitting there burning ants with a magnifying glass. But that's what he says, right? You can't use the sun with a magnifying glass to ignite a flame. Now, he doesn't say the ants, obviously. He's talking about a wick, right? Presumably, he also wouldn't like the torturous burning of ants, I'm assuming. I don't... I'm just guessing. Definitely not on Yom Tov. Yes. So you can't make fire.
Yeah.
Yeah. So presumably, just you know. Yeah, that's really nice. Fine. I take it back. I never said it. It never happened. Okay. See, this is the problem, is my examples get me in trouble. I always try to come up with examples where, like, no one can accuse me of, you know.
Okay, what if we, people, what's this, yeah, or
sign, leaves. Or in my house, we did it with crayons. Fine? We did it as a science experiment with my kids. We took the broken pieces. It's a good science experiment for kids. You take all the little pieces of crayons that they inevitably broke, right? And now you can either throw them out, or what you do, you can, and this is pretty easy in the Middle Eastern sun, is we went outside, we took all their little pieces of crayons, put it in a tin, like a baking tin, with a magnifying glass, even without one, and you put it in the sun until they melt, and then you bring it inside to the cold, and it melts into one big crayon with a lot of different colors. And then they can color with it, and, right, it's a little bit of yellow, a little bit of red, and they're all happy, and you didn't waste, you know, the hundreds of cracked crayons that you inevitably have. Okay? More innocuous example than the torturing of the ants. What? Well, there I really wonder. You are creating something new, right? That's really, right, really. I don't know. I don't know. Maybe, because that might go back to the old molid, right? The case of the, right, the ice, right, which we saw as a machlokas. Correct. I don't know if it would be this one, but it might be one of the other molids. So he says, "V'kol zeh v'chayotzei bo asur b'yom tov." All of this is also even on yom tov. So huter b'yom tov ela lahavir me'ish mitsuya. Because on yom tov is only permitted to spread a flame from an existing fire. Avol lahamtzi eish asur shari efshar lahamtzi oto mibe'erev. But to create a new flame is prohibited because you could have created that flame before Yom Tov.
Okay, but then if it went out, you could have, like,
right. Now, the I will just note that there's a problem here, which is that, as I said, it's the Rambam clearly formulates this prohibition, but he seems to make it sound like it's biblical, right? The problem is Efshar Meir of Yom Tov. The Ravid challenges him and says, V'yomar, he said, wait a second, is the Rambam actually rejecting molid? This seems to be the most obvious of molids, and the Gemara says it's molid, not whatever it is the Rambam thinks it is. And it, the Meiri as well says, Meiri again, like the Ravid, which is not surprising, they're both from Provence, say, I don't understand. Right, there are four categories of molid. Two of them are subject to machlokes. One of them, the Rambam accepts, which is molid eish. But the one that the Gemara is the most explicit about, quotes no machloket about whatsoever, the Rambam seems to actually not believe that it's actually molid. He agrees with the halacha that you can't create a new flame, but he seems to think that it's about efshrem vibod yom or lo efshrem vibod yom, which doesn't seem to be what the Gemara says. It seems to be about molid. So the Taz defends the Rambam, and he says, "Nira l'piyah na'adik, nira l'piyah niyudati." It seems to me the kavanah of Rambam, the avagav the domel ochal nefesh, ain't heter. Ki lo atira ochal nefesh lo dakei mashish far ba'olamis lo hayra ui lo chlab lo tikun kamo bishul va'afiyah. Maybe the Rambam believes that the only thing you're allowed to do are things that existed but weren't prepared. Avalam tilo lichi yeh ochal nefesh, but to create something from nothing that would be edible. That's biblically prohibited. So he actually entertains the possibility that the Rambam doesn't think it's Rabbanan, it thinks it's Doraita. He said that makes no sense, because fire, in the end of the day, is the first thing you need for cooking. And that's what the Rambam said, oh, you could use it before. So I think we're going to have to stop here. But what you see is that most of the poskim, so what we have is of the four, we have molid reyach, where Rashi thinks it's an usher because of molid, the Rambam thinks it's not, and Shulchan Aruch, Beis Yosef is machner. We have molid of water, which again, Rashi thinks it's molid, the Rambam thinks it's something else, it's about tochein, Sefer HaShulchan thinks it's something else. Again, Shulchan Aruch seems to be Mekel in terms of molid, the Ramah seems to be Machmir. Molid Eish, everyone seems to agree that it is Asur, and because of molid Chom, are creating heat. And then molid Eish, the vast majority of poskim here seem to assume that this is definitely prohibited D-Rabbanan, because of molid. But the Rambam seems to actually think that this category doesn't exist. He thinks it's Asur Mid-Oraita, because it's Esher Mibod Yom, but the simple reading of the Rambam is that he actually doesn't believe in this as Molad, even though he agrees with the Halakha. So what we'll see next week, I guess, assuming we have class, is the modern applications of this, right? It's very strange, because as I said, this becomes one of the earliest and most influential positions on why electricity is usher, is molid. But it's very weird, because you have four categories in Shas of molid, two of which are really subject to very heavy machloket, one of which is accepted, but the one from which most people derive it, molid eish, that one at least most folks can seem to agree is because of molid. The Rambam does not seem clear that that is the case. And yet, these positions become the basis of one of the first positions about electricity. So we need to figure out how we got there. And then the second question we got to figure out is, does it make any sense, right? We briefly looked at this last year. But now we'll tack it a little bit more directly and send it into electricity is because if it's molid, and we believe molid is a category, so then it is indeed usher on Shabbos and Yom Tov. But, first of all, the category of molid, in three of the four cases, is subject to machloket, as to its existence. And the second thing is, if you remember from category one of molid, molid is only ever what? Creating something new. And therefore, maybe you'd have room to prohibit turning on a new electric appliance, but it would be very hard, based on molid, to prohibit, right, turning up a volume, right, or something like that, where the electricity is already running and you're just increasing electric flow, because we've already said that even if molid does exist, it only exists in increasing a quality, not a quantity. And lest you think that that's crazy, that's in fact the conclusion of many poskim, is that there is no problem of raising or lowering the volume on like a radio or something on Shabbos. That's not even like a theoretical position, that's something that people do, right, that they actually believe is mutter, and it emerges from this sugya. Like, I know people who've done this, like, not like, if you'll notice, right, and you've probably noticed this in practice, which is hasala people, right, with their walkie-talkies, right, you ever notice how they don't really turn them off? Right, like they have them on at a very, very low, and if they hear a little bit of sound, they turn it up. Right, the reason to do that is because it's probably mutter to raise and lower. Right, turning it off, so then it might still be mutter, but because of pikach nefesh, right, if they knew they were getting a call, or whatever. But as long as it's on a little bit, right, and they turn it up, according to it's not creating something new, so it might be mutter l'chatchila. And therefore, since at least we always try to minimize the surim, as long as you leave it on, right, and you just play with the volume, but never actually turn it off, right, even if they're off shift, right, they'll usually, I think, will leave it at a very low volume, because then all they're doing is turning up and down the volume, which is not a problem, right, according to this model. Right, so this is actually something that is live. Again, I'm not poskening here, but I'm saying that this is, in fact, how many people do poskin, and this is where it comes from. Okay, we'll finish this off next time, whenever that is, next week or 2 weeks.